Thanks for downloading the Overdrive podcast. If you're ever looking to get behind the scenes, it's simple. Follow us on Instagram at TSN1050, or you will see myself, O-Dog and Noodles, what we do in the studio, before the show, during the show, after the show, constantly updating stories and best of clips. Again, follow us on Instagram at TSN1050.
It's time for Toronto's Top Line.
Mitch Marner is the story for me. Like, what this guy has done in the second half, I don't think it's getting enough attention.
But I've already wrote that.
I think it's a daily occurrence.
Just when he keep writing the
absolutely
same story every day?
Because it was a daily occurrence when he wasn't playing well enough the first two months.
Wrote, like,
and I was a part of that conversation, too.
This is Overdrive on TSN 1050, the official voice of the Leafs.
All right, Mike Johnson in here. Noodles back. We hadn't seen Noodles in quite some time. And the O-Dog, his March break continues. Pretty sure he's listening. He's probably watching now on TSN, too.
Well, if put
probably,
it this way.
Probably skiing at my club.
He might be. He was up there over the weekend.
Did you sign him in? Like,
so,
give us
hang
the
on.
Routine here.
So, like, so I went up. He sent me the thing, and I just signed him down so we can come in and ski. No big deal. And then he asked to come on Family Day weekend.
Yeah.
And it's the one weekend of the year you can't come.
No,
you just... Because you got to plan in advance, like, to get sold out. Otherwise, there's too many people.
Yeah.
And I think he was like, what do you mean? I'm like, it's sold out, man. I can't get... So then the next day, I guess he came on the show and said something to that effect. I don't know. I've not heard it, but something about...
He's like, well, yeah, he said, but he wasn't mad at you, but he's like, MJ couldn't get me in the club.
And so all the people, I see them at the club, like... What'd you do to O-Dog? I'm like, what? I didn't do anything.
How could you big time O-Dog?
But yeah, what you did is you told him the rules.
Yes.
That's it. But like,
and that they applied to him.
Yeah, and he was like, and then didn't you ask him like, isn't there a way that you could just grease your way in? And he like, O was like, yeah, he was gonna try and like palm $100
to a guy at the door.
And I'm like, these people are like zillionaires, a lot of these people in the club. They don't care about your money.
You can't show up at Rosedale Golf Course with a hunch and be like, can I play
slide
today?
Me in.
Here's $100. Can I please tee off?
That's not the way it works. It's wide open now if he wants.
Yeah, well, he's been up there as far as I know. He might be back in town now. But
Well, he was listening yesterday because he took a shot at Jonas.
Yeah. Which I thought was inappropriate, because there's enough hate that Jonas takes to begin with.
What's everyone picking on Jonas?
People pick on Jonas all the time. In fact, what did I just say before we came on the air? I'm like, I was yelling at Jonas a couple of times yesterday.
Somehow Jonas has slid into this show as a villain.
Yeah.
Like, and I think he's embraced it. Yeah, like he's come in.
I think he's embraced it. I don't know if he really has, because sometimes this is the danger of Twitter. Like, we'll start joking and goofing around where we're just kidding. Like, we love Jonas, and Jonas is a great guy. We've known Jonas for a long time.
Yeah,
I've worked with Jonas for years, for almost a decade. I've known Jonas, but the audience maybe doesn't pick up on that. And they're like, it's like a mob mentality, and people start tweeting at Jonas, and they're just carving the guy up.
Well, O puts out, like, polls. Should we get rid of Jonas? Yes or no? Like,
and he's asking for it at that point.
Yeah, like, it's just...
But we love Jonas. And
absolutely.
He'll be back later in the week. He'll be back before O-Dog will be back, so...
Yeah, it's not even mail-it-in mode. He's just...
He's in March break mode.
Yeah, I don't know.
He's like the Leafs. He's taking some time off for the stress drive.
Well, we were saying that earlier. Like, I got back from Florida last week. The Leafs have played once since I've been home.
3 games in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
With a 3-day break, a 4-day break, and a 3-day break.
This is after a bye week, after the All-Star break, after the Christmas break. Yeah.
The scheduling stinks.
It's been weird.
But you know what? I don't think it's bad for the team.
No, not at all. Get rest, especially down the stretch. But I was going over this. So tonight I'm doing the Sens game.
Are you sure?
They have 19 back-to-backs this year. Winnipeg has 9. So, I mean, MJ, you're like diving into the numbers. Like, take a look at, if you don't have a reliable backup, if you've got a guy that, you know, is okay, but he's not, and he's not having a good season. Like, Connor's not having a great season. If you go by the letter of what people are implementing right now, you want your backup to play on the second night, you've got to play him and roll him out 19 times.
Quarter of your season, for sure.
But that's my point. Like, so I was looking at it. I don't know how that works out, where you feel like either whether it's fair or not.
But it probably evens out over the course
Ottawa,
of a decade.
With no basketball team, you think... Scheduling would be...
Well, that's true, too.
They can offer up more dates. Like, if you're a super busy rink and you're running the Leafs and you have the ACC and the concerts and the Raptors and everything else, if you don't give in enough days, then you kind of are at the mercy of whatever they give you back.
Right.
But if you're Ottawa, or Winnipeg for that matter, who don't have the Manitoba Moose player, but they don't have other major tenants, you'd think that that shouldn't be a problem for Ottawa.
But don't you think as far as, and you're right, it's going to even out over 10 years.
But when you're in the moment, you hate it.
Yeah. But you're right. But don't you think there should be a rule implemented that's like, okay, like no more than 12 back-to-backs in a season?
I agree with you. Because like the NBA is doing that now. The NBA had a long history.
They have more 4 and 5.
They don't do 4 and 5, but they used to do that all the time. Yeah. Like 3 and 4 was a staple. 4 and 5.
Right.
Like that's back-to-back, day off, probably traveling, then back-to-back. That's crazy. And the NBA has taken it upon themselves to say, we're not doing that anymore.
It waters the games down.
It waters the games down. Hockey's such a physical sport. I'm with you, but
where's the solution, though? I don't think they want to play them back-to-back.
No, but you're right. Submitting the dates. But to me, you've got to find...
You know what the solution is?
What? Take the bye week out?
Make the season longer.
Or cut games down.
Or cut games. Both of which the players aren't willing to do. Just,
right. Or the league, for that matter. Because they don't want to give up the gate. They don't want to give up the money.
If I'm a general manager of a team and I'm on the cusp, so I'm at the start of the season, I'm looking at my team on paper and saying, we're going to be a stretch to make the playoffs. And the schedule comes out and goes, you've got 18 back-to-backs. And you're looking at a team that's constructed, you know, maybe farther ahead in the progression, and they've got 10.
It's like, a detail that doesn't get brought up enough.
But like I think the question then goes to if you're the coach or like GM president, the guy who puts in for the owner or whoever it is who puts in for this, you'd be like, what's going on here?
Well, you might be able to file a complaint, but they're not going to change the schedule because of that complaint. They'll take it into consideration next year.
Catch you back next year.
It doesn't do anything for you right now.
But exactly, when you're really hemorrhaging potentially a playoff gate.
Someone sent me this earlier in the year, and I'd have to go back and figure out all the numbers. But at least early in the season, the LA Kings benefited from playing the second part of a back-to-back, hosting
the second
it.
Back.
Right.
Yes, so like all the Eastern teams would roll through California, and they play in San Jose on Wednesday, and then LA on Thursday, and the Kings were sitting there waiting for them.
Yeah.
And that's a huge benefit to have.
It is, and that's the type of stuff.
Out west too, because
there's
the back-to-backs are more onerous,
right?
Because it's not going to Toronto to Buffalo, Toronto to Montreal, where you're in your hotel room by 12:30 at night.
Big difference.
You're getting in at 2, 3, 4 in the morning, even on short trips,
taking advantage.
Of it. There was no back-to-back where you wouldn't get even the time change going a little bit further west from Arizona. You'd get in at 2 to 3 in the morning every time.
Terrible.
Bob McKenzie will join us in studio in about 20 minutes. We'll get his take on that. Some news in Jay's camp. It has been confirmed. Our own Scott Mitchell from TSN confirming that Donaldson's suffering a calf injury, which he suffered from last year. There's a lot of injuries in camp. And to chat about it, here's Steve Phillips, our TSN Jay's analyst. Gibbons naturally sending out the note that he's fine. Donaldson, it's all good. But we saw what happened a year ago. How concerned would you be if you were in Blue Jays camp with what's going on with Donaldson?
Well, as a general manager, you're always concerned. So I would be worried about it, especially because it's a reoccurrence of something that's happened previously, which, you know, typically when you have some strain, there is a tear. Typically when there's a tear, there could be scar tissue that forms in there, and that could, you know, start to lose some of the elasticity that is normally there with muscles and ligaments and everything else. So it's concerning, but, you know, I take them as their word is that, you know, this is not a major blowout of his calf, like what he did sustain last year, and that it's more of a tweak than anything else. You know, especially they call, you know, listen, at first it comes out as cramping, and then it's, you know, it's a lingering effect from the calf. Now, I've had cramping in my calves before in the middle of the night, waking up with my calves all strained and everything else, and it could hurt for the next couple of days. It seems like there's something a little bit more than that he strained it, but, you know, nobody seems too panicked about it. But when, for Donaldson's case, this is not good. For a guy who's fighting against the argument that age matters, these sorts of nagging injuries are things that typically get applied to aging players, and it works against his case that the analytics don't apply to him. And so I think the impact is not only for the Jays and potentially for any sort of setback for the season, but also for his free agency and how he wants to market and brand himself.
Well, and from a Jays perspective, if they struggle this year, the belief is they'll put him on the table. come June, come July, and if you're willing to pay the price that they're looking for, they'll probably end up trading Josh Donaldson come July and come the trade deadline. Is there anything that could happen between now and the end of July that would significantly alter and deplete the value of Josh Donaldson on the trade market?
Well, yeah, health. Health is the thing, man. I mean, there's no question about that. Because here's the expectation. When he's healthy, he's going to be good. Because he still has a lot of game left in him. There's no question about that. And the Blue Jays season hinges upon his health. And if for some reason they're not winning, it may very likely be that it's because he got hurt. And therefore, it will lead to him being traded, but will also lead to him having less value in the trade market because of that health. Then again, if he's healthy at the time of the deadline, somebody will pay the price for the final 2 months of the season if they do want to trade him. But, you know, it is a double-edged sword because if he's going to get traded, it's likely going to be because he was injured, because a healthy Donaldson has a chance to be the MVP. I mean, we saw that in the time that he played last year with 33 home runs and the rates were off the charts, just like he plays when he's completely healthy and plays an entire season. So, it is one to be aware of. And here's the most obvious question to me. How can a player be dehydrated in spring training? Like, yeah, you're there with them all the time. Like, pump fluids into these guys. Like there should never be anybody that suffers from dehydration in spring training when you actually have control over what they're putting in their body because they're at the ballpark early. They're there throughout the course of the day. You lose track of them at night. But by the time they go home, make sure their urine's clear. I mean, it's not that hard.
Yeah, it does seem inexcusable, really. I'm like, grab Wait a minute.
I mean, my goodness. It's like it can't be that tough. Have pee in a cup if you have to.
How deep are these guys taking it? That's the thing. Like, I mean, you
there's other ways to get dehydrated besides working out?
You go out, like, there's times where you go to take a leak in the morning and it's syrup because you've had a late night out. So, is that any case? Could that be the thought process here?
I don't know. I mean, I've been to Dunedin and it's a wonderful place, but it's not the most hopping place in the world. I don't look at that as being any part of it. And quite honestly, maybe the dehydration was an excuse around the strain. And then it really wasn't dehydration. But if dehydration is any part of it, like that's the one thing we have control over. When the players are at the ballpark, I'll tell you, the Indians, and this is true, the Indians literally tested their players' hydration when they got to the ballpark by having them pee in cups, because they tested that because they believe hydration is an important part of maintaining strength and energy during the course of the season. It's something that gets compromised during the travel of the season. And so they actually did test. And so for me, it's one that I think you see more teams do it. And if this truly was dehydration and not any part of just the muscle strain that they tried to cover in some way, then I think they're probably going to have to start do some deeper testing there and try to get that under control.
I feel like the PA might take issue with that at some point. If this becomes a league-wide decision.
As long as they test only for hydration.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
I think, like, it's a coloration. I mean, it's not that tough. Right?
I hear you, Steve. But the cynic in me would suggest,
how about if I get to handle my own sample? Take a look.
Exactly.
There's the color. Yeah. I'm throwing it out.
Because if they're taking it in the back room, and then all of a sudden they're testing for other stuff that's going on, what the hell's going on here?
Like, that's true.
That seems like it might infringe on the rights of the players, I would think.
Yeah, I mean, you may be right. I mean, in this day and age, there's no question that that could possibly be the case. From a team's perspective, I think that they would make it easy, and if there's any discomfort from a player about what was being done with it, I think there's an easy way around, you know, trying to handle that gives everybody comfort when it's truly only in the best interest. Look, what the teams want, and this is one of the things that so many times there becomes this us-against-them mentality that gets created between players and agents and teams. But the bottom line is, what the team wants out of a player and what a player wants is exactly the same thing. The player wants to have a great season. The team wants the player to have a great season. The player wants to stay healthy. The team wants the player to stay healthy, too. Like the whole argument about Stroman and pitching on opening day. You know, of course he does. You know, he wants to be an ace. Aces pitch on opening day. So there's logic involved in that. But when you have shoulder inflammation, then, you know, the magic of opening day is much less important than the health of the player. From the team's perspective, they want the healthiest player for the most starts he can make over the course of a season. And putting any risk at the most starts for the most innings because you want to squeeze it into a certain day is not something teams ever want to take the chance on. And so, of course, they're going to be conservative with it. And what players need to understand, and they may not always buy this, and agents may not always sell it, but what the team wants and the player wants, the ultimate goal is exactly the same. The team wants the player to be great, just like the player does, and to get as much performance as they possibly can.
So, Steve, you mentioned Stroman there, obviously nicked up. Tulowitzki, 60-day DL. We have the calf strain. Anyway. I mean, right. Which of these guys do the Jays need the most to be healthy the whole year to have a chance to have a good season?
They need Stronaldson is what they need.
Nice.
That much depth, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. So look, you know, Tulo, they built in some depth this year. And what we've seen over the last couple of years is Tulo hasn't been the same player. Now, if Tulo's got that game still left in him, then it's, you know, they desperately need him back. But they built in some protection for themselves in the middle infield with some foresight on a potential issue there. They need Donaldson on the field. If, you know, you think back to last year, you know, where they came up short in the playoffs for that second wild card spot where it was 85 wins, I think, that the Twins ended up with. You know, if they had had Donaldson healthy the entire season, I think they'd have been a heck of a lot closer to that wild card spot. If they had kept their starters healthy without a Sanchez issue, you know, for even 28 starts during the season, 25 starts during the season, they probably would have been a playoff team. So I think that they desperately need Donaldson. They cannot afford his bat out of the lineup. They could probably manage around some missed starts from Stroman more than they can miss Donaldson's bat in the lineup. So I think Donaldson's probably the lead in it. But they can't afford much of loss anywhere because they don't have enough margin for error to do it.
With Steve Phillips, you're down there at spring training doing the rounds, jumping around from camp to camp. Are you hearing anything on Jose Bautista and whether or not teams are legitimately kicking tires on him?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I was at Braves camp, talked to Alex Anthopoulos yesterday, and, you know, they've got this young stud, Ronald Acuna Jr., who is going to be a superstar outfielder, who's probably not going to start the season in the major leagues. And you know, whether they give him the Chris Bryant treatment where, you know, Bryant was sent down for a couple of weeks to work on his defense before he came up and, you know, was almost an MVP in his rookie year. It remains to be seen. But he did suggest that they were potentially looking for another outfielder, and he didn't say who. My guess is that Melky Cabrera is probably more a fit for them than Bautista, and I've not really heard Jose's name anywhere right now. And, you know, the challenge for him is that people can't really look at him as the right-handed bat in a platoon because when you look back to last year, his numbers against left-handed pitching, he hit well below 200 against left-handers. And, you know, if you're going to bring that right-handed bat to go to complement a left-handed bat in your outfield, you're going to want to try to platoon there. And he had reverse splits on the platoon, so it just really doesn't fit for him.
Thank you for doing this, Steve. Always appreciate it. We'll do it again soon.
My pleasure, guys. I'm going to go and check my hydration right now.
Yeah, please do. Please do that.
Work on that.
Yeah, exactly.
And test it yourself. Don't put some other guy through that process.
You got it.
There's Steve Phillips. Like, that'd be a tough gig, man. The dehydration tester. Like, if that's your gig.
You just got to check the cup and that looks too yellow or that looks nice and clear.
That's what I do for a living, man. I test urine in the bigs.
Well, that's basically what the drug tester is in the NHL.
Yeah, and
he
it's
rolls to the dressing room and it's like the movies where not only they want the sample, they need to see the sample being put.
Like they're sitting in there. They're watching what's
you don't
going
have
on.
Your back turned to them. It is there's no
you ever
wizinator
had
from Ontario you ever go Smith to an coming out.
Airport bathroom. You ever had stage fright or at a concert or something? You got a guy that's his job.
Full front and center.
Watching you take a leak. Yes.
Right. And he's got plans later in the day. Like, let's get going here. Yeah. I gotta move.
And the thing is sometimes like they'll show up and you've just taken a leak. Now you got to drink a bunch of water and it takes time. Like it's.
I can't see that being allowed throughout the league. Like full blown dehydration test where every day you show up and you all line up like cattle.
And that's also like.
I don't see it.
To the Steph Curry story. I mean, you're a grown adult. You can do what you want. And maybe one night you want to go out and have a good time and you come in and you're dehydrated. You don't want that to be held against you because look how unprofessional this guy is.
Well, that's a good point, too. Like, if they're testing every day, it's like, well, every fourth day you're dehydrated. It's like, well, every fourth day we don't practice. So, go out and have a bottle of wine. You know,
or whatever. Like, you can't do it. Like, it's to me, it violates, you know,
privacy or something.
Privacy code. Like,
I'm too cynical to believe that every team would be on the up and up on that too. Like, I think they'd be looking for different things.
Yeah, or you know, can we waive this guy's contract? What else do we find?
Right, exactly. You know, That's what I'm saying. Yes, like, they find a trace of, you know, whatever, and it's like, well, look at what we found. Sorry, man.
Well, that, yeah,
you know,
that,
you're out.
Now it gets into legalities and stuff. I mean, you think of, I've got a buddy who owns a pretty large company that works in the oil sands in Fort McMurray, Alberta. Those workers, like, are drug tested daily, but I mean, they're handling
safety.
Yeah, it's a safety code.
Yeah.
But they, I mean.
Well, did you see what the TTC results were there, most recent?
There were some bad results.
There were some really bad results.
Yeah, there were some issues there. Yeah. But he said the same thing. You get guys that, you know, they call them rig pigs, but the riggers go in and they spend 10 days in and 12 hours a day, and the other 12 hours they're enjoying themselves and show up. I mean, they've found creative ways to get around this type of test.
As they should. It's not the drugs, it's the drug testing.
As you do.
Yeah, exactly.
Bob McKenzie in studio next. All right, we'll tell you more about this Golden State Warriors story from last night that carried over to today. We'll get to that later in the hour. Get to our Maple Leaf lineup player of the day. Best Bets brought to you by ProLine. But the Hockey Insider is brought to you by Finance It. And Bob McKenzie is back in Toronto after a brief getaway. What's happening, Bob?
Not much. Good to be back, I guess.
You don't have to lie to us. It's not good to
be back.
No,
I actually, I'm kind of looking forward to the stretch drive here, but we got to get this weather fixed up a little, just a little. It's got to warm up a little for March, doesn't it?
Still ugly.
Yeah,
it's ugly. I was down in Florida, and you just assume you're going to come back, and it's going to be like 15 degrees for whatever reason.
Yeah.
Like, I was down there for a week. Why would it change that drastically?
Listen, but I mean, when was the skiff of snow? Was it yesterday or when?
Yeah, it snowed
a little yesterday morning. Today.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, like
it's not like that bad. It's
it's
0 degrees,
it's
1 degree.
You know, pretty good March.
I got to wear a jacket.
Yeah.
You got to wear a jacket?
Oh, definitely.
It's chilly enough.
But we're in the stretch run of winter. Like, it's coming to an end, and the spring is around the corner.
Let's hope.
Award season around the corner, and we've kind of talked a little bit about this, and the MVP, we talked a lot about it yesterday. We had Dregs in here, and Dregs is on the McDavid being considered for the Hart train, and Craig was saying the same thing, and I don't think there's anything wrong with including him in the conversation, but have you voted for the Hart before?
Yeah, I voted every year.
Oh, you still vote. Okay. Yep. So where do you stand on this arbitrary rule that you have to be on a playoff team to be up for the MVP?
Yeah, I'm not. I don't get overly hung up on that by myself, but I've always been an avowed, you know, I'm aware of the literal definition of the rule, which is player adjudged to be most valuable to his team. But I also think people worry about that almost to a fault. And that if, you know, you can still make a case for a guy being on a non-playoff team being more valuable to his team than somebody who's in the playoffs. And yet, it's not just a best player award. That's what the Lindsay Trophy is, yet the players get to vote on that. So I don't know. I'm kind of a hybrid when it comes to trying to measure those things. And if, you know, I guess my point would be this. If Colorado falls 2 points short of making it in, I don't think it really should hurt Nathan MacKinnon for what he's done for that team. I mean, I just don't. I don't think it makes any difference in the world, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. But if you're 16 points out in 27th place and you're Connor McDavid, my perception is like you're not excluded, but you got to be that much better than the guys around you because your team's not done well.
I would say that. And the way he's been playing lately, if he keeps scoring at the rate he's been scoring, if he wins there at Ross by, you know, 10 points and gets himself in the Rocket conversation, which I realize he's not going to because he's, 30 or 31, whatever he's at.
Yeah.
And Ovi's already at 42. But yeah, you know, I like to keep an open mind right to the end of the season. And I know we all engage in these conversations, and rightfully so. We got to have something to talk about in March. But, you know, what happens these last 10, 12, 14 games really matters and in a big way.
I mean, not that I'm advocating for it because I don't see anybody falling in that, but like I haven't seen a goalie's name be mentioned.
Well, that's what I've always said. Like, if it's we talk about the semantics. So
goalie should never win this award at all.
But why?
Because
not?
If you're going to talk about value, the goalie would win it every year.
But that's
year.
The whole point.
They
though.
Have an award. See, it's called the best enough. That's the best goalie award.
The one exception I would
Unless
make to
it's
that
Dom or somebody crazy Dominic good.
Dominic Hasek didn't just dominate his position; he dominated the league.
Yeah, right.
And that because. Here's the thing that might ultimately hurt a guy like Nikita Kucherov in Tampa, is every time the Tampa Bay players do an interview, they go, oh, Vasilevsky, he's our MVP.
He's been the best player.
And I'm like, well, yeah, he's the goalie, and I agree. There's in my mind, I thought it was a travesty. Not a travesty, that's the wrong word. I thought it was wrong that Jose Theodore beat Jerome Iginla.
We were talking about this off air.
Yeah.
I thought it was an embarrassment.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm an Iginla apologist, so I mean, like, we don't want to get into that. But
yeah, and Theodore was great that year, and I thought it was a dominant goaltending performance. But I just think that Jerome was the guy that year. And that was also fishy because there were so many people that left Jerome off the ballot entirely. I don't know how you could possibly submit a five-person ballot for Hart Trophy that year and not have Iginla on there unless you want Theodore to win. Put Theodore at one. Put four
others.
Four plugs in at 2, 3, 4, and 5 and make sure Iginla is nowhere to be found. So,
are you on board with then publishing not only your vote, but everyone who votes for it, having to put it out there publicly?
I don't have a problem with my...
I think I like it because then it just... Yeah, a little
transparency.
Bit of accountability.
Now, what I will say is this. I have no problem with my vote being out there. Transparency, I don't have an issue with. Having said that, the thing that bothers me, and I know this from experience, just when I've done my own, like I've told people afterwards I voted this way, or when I say I'm picking, you know, any list of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, whatever, people are going to say we're so and so, and all of that. What bothers me is, I don't like going five deep. Now, I understand why they go five deep in award balloting, because it really helps to break down ties, and it's
right.
If you know, the statistical guys will tell you how much better the voting sample is if you've got five guys on a ballot as opposed to three guys on a ballot. But my point is this. The difference between number four, number five, and 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 is almost always negligible. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so that's whenever I've published stuff, the 1 through 5, I don't usually get that much grief for the first, the second, and the third.
You get
people who go bat you know what crazy because you've got somebody at 6 instead of, you know,
8
instead of 4 or whatever. And again, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. As Bill Murray said in Meatballs, it just doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But that's the only part of it where people spend ridiculous amounts of time getting in your face about, you know, who you picked at 4 and 5 as opposed to who you picked at 1, 2, and 3. And it's really a 1, 2, and 3 award, let's be honest, when it's all said and done.
They go to the award show, that's what everyone knows. And
yeah, so my thing is, I would feel better about transparency if my vote showed up as 1, 2, and 3, so I don't have to defend what I was thinking on 4, 5 versus 6, 7, 5, 6, 7, and 8. But at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter.
My biggest pet peeve out of all of this is when you start to see some of the votes, like just the totals, and there's one like jackass vote.
Yeah.
Where, you know, a couple of years ago, I think Radko Gudas was up for Rookie of the Year. Like, okay, who the hell is making
Philly
that
beat writer having some fun?
You know, yeah, I don't know.
Like, that type of stuff always pisses me off because it's a situational, and I know people love their team, but that completely, to me, takes the objectivity out of it. It just, you're going to vote for the guy that you watch every night.
Right, but you get enough ballots that it does, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter.
But if it was transparent, you could publicly shame that jackass and be like, you know what?
I would also say this.
Which I like. I'm a supporter of
Torrey Krug was
shaming.
Second to Norris, I think, last year.
Okay, so exactly.
Somebody, so that guy should be called out. But also, I will say this. In arbitration, which nobody goes to anymore, if you get votes for anything, even if it's one fifth place vote, like a throwaway Selke, Lady Bing, like, in there, he received
Someone
votes as a Selke nominee. Right. Like, it matters, not a lot, but a little bit, because it stays with you forever.
And I know it's the writer's rights not to have the transparency, but I, you know, if you're confident in your ability to, you know, to vote, Like I voted in broadcasters. I think we voted last year for Coach of the Year. You know, I can't remember who I voted for, but I could pull it up somewhere. But I wouldn't have a problem telling people because, yeah, it's my opinion, but I also track the league, and I don't just get caught down one tunnel. And it just
and you take it seriously,
well,
too.
Well, exactly. I don't find...
You respect the vote.
I do, and I try to respect it, but I just... I feel in that... That's what kind of frustrates me, is it... You know it's somebody in that market that falls in love with that player and is not being objective to the rest of the process.
Well, we were talking about lists and all times with Ovechkin and the history that he made last night, hitting 600 goals. And we're talking to Ray about this and the idea of him, you know, moving up the list of all-time mm-hmm. great players. He's already put himself in a position where he's one of the great goal scorers of all time. And based on era adjustments,
yep.
maybe you could argue he's the greatest goal scorer of all time.
You could easily make that case.
But you look at the great players, and Ray said he has a difficult time envisioning himself putting a guy like Ovechkin in, say, the top 10 all-time, because we focus so much on the goal scoring. And he's more than just a goal scorer. But you look at Gretzky, played center, Bobby yeah, Orr, defenseman. Exactly. But the thing is, how was a winger? Richard was a winger. Bobby Hall's considered a top 10 player of all time. Why can't Ovechkin be considered better than Bobby Hall in 10 years?
Yeah.
Like, why is that an impossibility?
I guess it's not, but you could make that case for sure. Gordy was different because he was, you know, Mr. Hockey.
Right.
And he played a 200-foot game, and he was mean and nasty, and he was a playmaker. He did. He wasn't the prototypical one-dimensional scoring winger. Some people would say Bobby Hull was, but I think that's probably damning Bobby Hull with faint praise. The Bobby Hull in his day might have been a better all-around player than Alexander Ovechkin is, and therefore might be in that group. But even those are the guys that tend to get pushed down the list a little bit. You know, and Rocket was an iconic player. And, you know, and again, and then it goes back to, okay, well, Stanley Cups. And Bobby Hull did not win a lot of Stanley Cups. Hawks won in 61.
Yeah.
Hawks won in 61, and I think he was on that team. That's the only one he won. And Rocket Richard had Stanley Cups coming out the wazoo. Mm-hmm. And Ovi doesn't have the playoff success. And when you get into those types of conversations, that hurts you, whether you like it or not.
Right. Well, and we were, you know, discussing, everyone's trying to find the next Ovechkin within the league, and Patrick Laine is making a case for himself recently, and Matthews would be a part of that. Maybe Kucherov should be included. But I can't picture any of these kids matching his greatness at goal scoring. Yet, when you talk about the greatest player of the generation, I think most would say it's Sid. I can picture McDavid catching Sid.
Yeah.
Like, I can picture in 20 years me being like, Sid was unbelievable, but I think McDavid was a little bit better.
Well, honestly, and it's way too early to say, but if anybody's going to duplicate Ovechkin type numbers, this Line A kid looks like he could do it.
You think so?
I mean, he shoots the puck from the same place on the ice, patterns his game after him, and has just scored a phenomenal, ridiculous number of goals in a short period of time as a teenager in the National Hockey League. So, I mean, he's well on his way.
Well, that's the other part you forget. Ovi was 20 because of the missed year and everything else when he started.
Yeah.
Right.
Line's not even 20 yet.
Yeah.
And you know, he's already got the 80 goals in the bank.
You know, it'll be interesting to see, because the other thing that comes with Ovechkin is just how durable he is.
Very
and
impressive.
How physical he can play. And that's different than, you know, Line A has to prove his durability over time. And he may develop more physical play to his game, but that's not something that you naturally jumps out at you the way it did with Ovechkin from the very first time I saw him at the World Junior Championship. And he was a bull in a china shop.
Oh, yeah, 50 plus his first year. He was so money right off the bat.
Brian, you said he was Eric Lindros like as far as
he had a physical element that was different
right
than everybody else.
Yeah, and he like there were times where he would crush people in the corner, and like those guys weren't coming out in an era like waffle them.
Yeah,
and he loved it.
Right,
like he actually got more engaged the times that people were chasing him around. And I was saying this even last hour, like, would just some small percentage, would we look at Ovi different if he wasn't Russian? Like, if he was a Canadian boy from Saskatchewan or London, Ontario?
Yeah, maybe. No, I don't think there's any question at certain times that's worked against him. But I also think, you know, it's... Everybody gets the rigors of the rigorous second guessing of not winning championships.
Yeah. Right.
You know, and I mean, even Ray Bourque got it until he finally got one.
Right.
Yeah. You know, but I also said, and I said on some other radio stations today, you know, they asked me if Ovechkin's legacy is diminished by not having won a cup. And my answer to that is, well, if Ray Bourque hadn't been traded to the Colorado Avalanche that year, would Ray Bourque's legacy as a defenseman in the National Hockey League have been diminished in your mind? And my answer would be no.
Yeah.
Well, it's nice that he got it, but I don't think it...
That make him a less of a player?
I don't think it made him any less... Anything he did for the Boston Bruins, it didn't diminish it one bit that his team wasn't good enough.
What about Jerome Iginla?
Mm-hmm.
But he has Olympic medals.
Yeah.
But here's a guy who didn't get a cup. And
like Hasek, I think, got one in Detroit. Did he get one in Detroit? I don't even know if he was on that team in the end. But
Hasek won one in Detroit.
Yeah. I think he got one. And then he had the 98 gold medal, which was incredibly impressive. But that's, you think he's the greatest goalie of all time.
I do personally. But again, I have a tough time comparing eras because I didn't get to see Jacques Plante play.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't get to.
But it feels like Hasek dominated his position.
Yeah.
More like than anybody, and that's like, hard to say when you've got Patrick Waugh winning three Conn Smythes and doing what he did, and Marty Brodeur for the excellence at such a long period of time, and goaltenders like that.
The Leafs calling up Andreas Janssen. He's been lighting up the American Hockey League this year and even last year, and I know there's been whispers that like the Leafs are high on him and he's got NHL potential, and I guess they feel like he's ready. What do you make of the timing of this and what we can really expect out of Janssen?
It's a different circumstance, but it's not really any different than what they did 2 years ago. When, remember, they brought up Nylander and those guys after the deadline. And I still think it's part of the philosophy of the Leafs. And they're in a position to be able to do it as well. And I think they're curious to see. You know, let's see what this guy's been dominating and playing at a high level in the American League, putting up some really spectacular numbers. Let's bring him up and let's give him a shot and let's see what we got here. You know, this might be a guy that can help us in the playoffs, but we don't want to be figuring that out when we're down 2-0 in a playoff series, saying, oh, maybe this guy will work. Let's give him some games now and let's see if he's a better option than Levo or some of the other guys that are floating around on the periphery of the fourth line.
Is Mike Babcock now open enough to have someone like this make a strong enough impression in the 1, 2, 5 games he gets to play that he could potentially be an asset in the playoffs?
I think so. I think so. And to some degree, you know, Kapanen's kind of gone through the same thing and did last year. He was a big player for them in that Washington series.
Playoffs, yes.
And he had a relatively limited window coming up after, I think he came up after the deadline, didn't play a ton of games in the regular season. And I think if you're going, you know, depending on who has to come out of the lineup for you.
That's always a debate.
Mike's got certain guys that he's, you know, like Hyman's not coming out of the lineup because Andreas Janssen plays really well.
Right.
But somebody else might.
Well, the luxury of depth. Like, when you consider where they were a couple of years ago, they just didn't have it. Now they got guys who, when they're healthy, won't be playing like a Martin, like a Dominic Moore, maybe a Janssen. You know, these guys
are... Levo's regretting signing here. I mean, I know he's got a contract for next year.
Yeah,
and I appreciate that guaranteed money is fine.
I think something...
he think maybe he's just waiting for the other guys to leave next year and have a different window? Because
that's what I think the plan was when he signed.
No JVR,
I didn't understand at the time. I you know, nothing but respect for the kid. I really like him as a hockey player. Saw him play junior hockey a lot and thought this guy can be an NHL winger, and I still do. And but the most surprised guy in the world when he signed that extension was this guy, me, because I just assumed, you know, I thought he would be able to read the situation as I read it, which is, you're not going to play. There's always going to be somebody ahead of you on this configuration between what's on the Leaf roster now, what's in the minors at the Marlies that the Leafs have coming,
right,
and the way the coach views you. There's always going to be somebody. There's always going to be 12 guys ahead of you, unless there's a real big raft of injuries. And that you were slated to become an unrestricted free agent. But if you wanted to take the extra security of a year and have an NHL contract and next year would have to be, you know, have to go down on waivers.
Well, I think
but there's no guarantee. Sorry,
I think he gets traded.
But like, Let's say he goes through camp next year and he's passed by Janssen or whoever else comes along.
Maybe Grundstrom.
And then at that time of the year, it's hard to get claimed on waivers. Beginning of the year.
Harder.
Yeah. Because everyone's healthy. Everyone's in love with their prospect who look good in training camp. So he gets the guaranteed money. But I don't know if he's guaranteed himself a spot in the NHL.
Yeah, so as I say, I guess I understand on one level why he did what he did. But I guess on another level, I looked at it and said, I don't think I would have done that.
All right, Bob, good to have you back, man. We'll do it again in studio later in the week.
Thanks, guys.
Here's Bob McKenzie, your Hockey Insider, brought to you by Finance It. Add a payment plan to your tool belt, then break down large price tags into easy, affordable payments with Finance It. We'll get to our Maple Leaf lineup player of the day and best bets next. The Upper Deck Leafs lineup player of the day on Friday, Cohen with the names of all five players. And this week, you can win a pair of tickets to see the Leafs take on Buffalo April 2nd at the ACC. The theme this week, former Leafs who played in the 99 Toronto versus Buffalo Eastern Conference Final. And today's Maple Leaf lineup player of the day is Mike Johnson. And MJ was here, and he just went ninja dust on us. He's out of here to do TV, but MJ is your player of the day. The Upper Deck Leafs lineup is brought to you by Upper Deck Team Triples, available at ZephyrEpic.com.
It's impressive, MJ.
I forgot he was on that team in 99 that went to the conference final. I think that was his rookie year. No, he would have played at the Gardens, so he would have played in 97, I think, maybe was his rookie year. If he was still here, he'd just tell us all the information.
Yeah, he had to bolt to get set up.
He's got to get set up. You're on the same show as him in 10 minutes, but he's got to get set up.
I don't get set up.
Time now for our best bets brought to you by ProLine. I'm on Boston tonight. I'm on Tampa home plus against Ottawa. And over the number, Edmonton-Calgary tonight. Throw down 20. You can score 85. You can find my picks on Twitter at TSN 1050 Radio and get way into the game with ProLine. It's the sports betting game that lets you turn small wagers into big excitement. ProLine get way into the game. So quickly, Steph Curry had his 30th birthday party last night.
Yeah.
And he's injured. He's had an injury problem for the past couple of weeks anyway. But they were supposed to practice, the Warriors, today.
Yeah.
And they're like, we're not practicing.
No, I'm fine with that.
Like, even Steve Kerr was at the party, which I wonder how old school athletes feel about the head coach being at the player's birthday party.
Yeah.
That changes the complexion of the party a bit, doesn't it?
It does, but I get the sense that NBA players don't care. They're going to do their own thing regardless if the coach, the owner, whatever, like...
Come out if you want to, but not practicing tomorrow.
You think Durant's not have an extra beer because Steve Kerr's sitting on a couch there?
Probably not.
They're shotgunning Jagger. They're doing everything they want to.
Well, that's how confident they are in their standings right now. You know, like, we're into crunch time here. There's a month left before the playoffs, and they're like, party, shutdown practice, who cares? We're
and
good.
And Steph Curry rolled up in a yacht.
Yeah, as he should. That's how you roll if you're Steph Curry.
Awesome.
All right, Noodles, good stuff.
Yep.
We're out of here. Enjoy your evenings. We're back tomorrow at 4 p.m.
We'll chat then.